This webinar podcast was brought to you by Illuminati. Illuminati builds stunning, dynamic platforms that meaningfully connect people and deliver deep community experiences.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon from the UK. Good morning, if you're joining us from the US. It's my pleasure to invite you, to welcome you to Creating Connections 12. Where we'll be talking about harnessing the power of meaningful alumni experiences. My name is Daniel Watts, and I am Managing Director and Founder of Illuminati. And this event is one of a series of events called Creating Connections, which is our monthly event series that we present to members of the Community Builders Network, our community of people who work within communities, both in the education, enterprise, and membership. Everyone here is warmly welcome to join the Community Builders Network. You'll receive details after the event. Doing so will obviously make sure that you get invitations to future events, as well as our monthly newsletter called The Illumination, which will be the latest news, events, and thought leadership around creating connections and building community. So just to let you know a bit about Illuminati, it's a company that works with various institutions around the world, providing community technologies, primarily through the provision of a community platform. It is called Illuminate, or Illuminati Builder. So yes, if you'd like to know see more about that platform, please join us at the table after the Q&A. But right now, I'd like to invite Lisa, our speaker, to the stage, and also Becky, who will be introducing Lisa before she starts. So Becky, over to you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. We have an excellent webinar lined up for you all today. Our speaker is Lisa Morris, the founder of Explore, an experience design and innovation firm based here in the States in Charlotte, North Carolina. Lisa is an organizational anthropologist, experience designer, and strategist steeped in human-centered design principles and perspectives with a passion for designing experiences for people in the world of work. I'm thrilled to have her here today. Lisa was critical in the team during my time at Coca-Cola and in the development of our future alumni community and the experience strategy. Lisa was instrumental in the research phase by exploring and interviewing our alumni, retirees, and employees. She helped us analyze the information to better understand the needs of our community and our business challenges. And from there, she helped us guide the experience design for an alumni community that was founded in insight and understanding of the alumni and the retirees. And again, I'm thrilled to have her. In this session, Lisa will share the key to engaging people through winning their hearts and in turn, business through creating meaningful experiences. Doing successfully necessitates more than adding a human layer to what we already are doing and have plans to do. It requires reframing the who, why, what, and how, and trusting in the power of a human-centered experience design approach to lead you to the best solutions for the people and the business. I'm excited for Lisa to share her experience with you all today. Lisa, thank you again so much, and I'll now hand it over to you.
Becky, thank you so much for inviting me and for giving me the opportunity to speak to your community. Becky's done such a great job of introducing myself. I need to say nothing more except that I probably need to shorten some of my profile. With that being said, what I want to do is really just invite you to relax and enjoy. I promise I don't plan or try to plan to convert you to a researcher or a designer. My objective is to purely offer you how a human-centered approach can be beneficial. I assume many of you out there are community leaders, and so one of your goals, if not the foremost goal that you have, is to actually grow your community and engage your members over time. So that's what we're going to jump into today, and we're going to jump in real quickly with an exercise. So I invite you to close your eyes for a moment, and what I want you to do is envision one of your healthiest relationships today. And let's, for today's purposes, assume that's with another human. And let's define healthy as an expression that you feel your needs are being satisfied in this relationship. And the other person feels equally satisfied with the relationship, whatever that looks like. Again, both parties kind of come to a relationship with maybe some different needs that they hope to be satisfied in this relationship. So more importantly, it's really that the feeling is equally satisfying. And so what we're envisioning here is a healthy, balanced exchange felt through the experiences of each other in this relationship. So with your eyes closed for a moment, just think about this relationship. Think about how it makes you feel as you interact and experience this other individual. Think about the things that you think about. Identify the needs maybe that are being satisfied in this relationship and those that are not being satisfied, maybe intentionally or not. Great, you can open your eyes now. So what? Why did I do that? Well, what I'm trying to help you understand, if you zoom out of your details in the role that I have as a community leader, I like to suggest that ultimately what you're really trying to do, or essentially what you're trying to do, is to create the essence of this healthy relationship with your community members. And equally important is the experience they have as part of this community, because it's the experience that validates for them whether or not this relationship, this exchange, is healthy. And from there, it influences their decision-making about whether they engage, whether they stay engaged in their relationship, whether they even maybe engage more deeply, or whether they unfortunately disengage. I am going to share for you now my slides, so just bear with me for a moment. What I believe the organizations are well-intended, I think that they aspire to create a very balanced, if you will, mutual value exchange. I believe the challenge lies in their approach to getting there. And for that matter, I think it therefore compromises some of the results they receive. When working with my clients, like a good expert, I always start with an innocent question on my part, at least. The question is something like, who is this for? And why do you want to do this? And what I often hear is a couple of different things. Typical is like, that's a great question. I think we're still working on that. Or I hear, well, the organization needs, the business wants, the institution hopes for, et cetera, et cetera. At least what comes to their minds first and foremost is in fact, organization, business, institution. They usually start from work from the needs of only one side of that relationship. Again, the business, the organization, the institution, and sometimes try to frame it as the value proposition to the members. And that's really not that surprising, and I'm not trying to be critical. It's just many of us have been trained to make decisions based on what we think is best for the business and the organization first. And in this business-centric view, we engage in what I call inside-out thinking. And in inside-out thinking, not only do we know what's best for the business first, we also assume we know what's best for the members. And if we take that a bit further, the results we strive for then, unfortunately, are also very internally based and internal thinking, using our intuition, if you will, to guide us. At the end of the day, really, in many of these cases, the members, their needs, the experiences they want, don't really play a leading role in our approach. And therefore, their needs aren't truly, in my opinion, considered. But we do a really great job, if you will, of kind of reverse engineering into those needs. And it is this type of thinking, and when it's prominent, that I tend to see more of a transactional relationship between the community members and the community. So what I'd like to suggest is a more balanced view. In today's world, where people have tons of choice, and as we all know, make very intentional decisions about who we spend our time with, where we spend our time, what we spend our time doing, and we have relatively a lot more agency. And finally, we live in an economy, essentially, where we as humans, and there's tons of research on this already, are going to value our experiences more than the things that we possess. So with that being said, I like to offer that taking a more balanced view, a more human-centered, a more outside-in thinking approach is really beneficial in this case. And in this outside-in thinking, we don't assume. We engage our targeted members. We listen to them to learn about who they are and what they're really telling us they want. Sometimes they don't tell us exactly. We've got to interpret that as best as we can. And we are able to do that because we have spent time learning about them. And with this information, we are better able to make more informed decisions on what's best for our members as part of this community. And I think in a balanced view, this enables a stronger foundation for what I call this mutual value exchange. And that is in fact what people do want these days in their relationships with community organizations, with businesses. And I think by taking this view, we really have a wonderful opportunity to transform what can tend to be a very transactional relationship to one that is much more transformational with you, if you will, one that is about the give and the get on an even basis. And in fact, these experiences that come from this value exchange tend to be much more meaningful for these members. And to me, that's the power of a human-centric approach. As you might have guessed, having said this as well, empathy is really core to a human-centered approach. And I know there has been lots of conversation about empathy. Brené Brown is one of those experts, and I probably don't have to remind you, but I'm going to really remind you about this because it is empathy, but it's empathy in a new context. So in the context of a human-centered approach, empathy is not assumptive, nor is it judgmental. It's really, again, like all other empathy definitions, it's the ability to understand and to share the feelings of another. It requires that we walk in their shoes and in their world and see through their eyes, not our eyes. And we do this by putting aside our preconceived ideas, adopting some humility, and just sort of choosing to understand the opinions, the thoughts, and the needs of others instead. And in doing so, we open ourselves up to what is called creative possibilities. So where we might have assumed something and solved it in a certain way, by having empathy, by understanding somebody else's world, we can actually come up with some other alternatives that create a more meaningful connection with them. So I want to show you a quick video to kind of bring this importance to life. And I'm going to forewarn you, it might feel a little sad, but I promise you that it's well-intended and chosen specifically for this purpose. So if I could ask for those to play the video, that would be great. Alrighty, you might be asking yourself, why in fact did I play that video? Well, I in fact played the video because I want to demonstrate to you that if don't ask, we really don't know. Imagine if the captions in the video were not visible. Most of us, if not all of us, would make up a story about the person. It's what our brains do. It's how we kind of survive. We would start to make the story up about why are they there? I wonder what they're going through. What might they need in the moment? I wonder who's supporting them. So you can only imagine the story that comes to mind. However, with the insight provided by the captions, what we're able to do is empathize with the individual. We're able to step into their shoes and begin to see the world from their perspective, not ours. It's this insight that I believe is so beneficial to reframe, if you will, this relationship. And this reframe is really centered to a human-centered approach. By doing the empathy work, if you will, and the listening work and the understanding work, we create a stronger foundation for a mutual value exchange. When taking a human-centered approach, as you can see, we have the opportunity now to reframe the relationship. That involves reframing the who, the why, and the what. And with this approach, unlike other approaches, the who informs the why, and the who and the why inform the what. In other approaches, it actually is the why, and then the who and the what, or sometimes the what, the why, and the who. So again, in this approach, it's the who that informs the why, and the who and the why that inform the what. So let's dig a little bit deeper into each of these reframes. If we start with the who, this, as I mentioned, is really about constantly engaging in empathy and reframing the who from maybe the business, as an example, to the individuals, asking the right questions and kind of always being curious. And some of the things that are involved when we apply a human-centered design approach in the who is we begin to think about all the possible ranges of members as individuals with different goals and needs. So this is not about a one-size-fits-all. It's really about engaging with these individuals and speaking to them to understand their diverse needs and wants and being able to see them as they are. And by understanding that information and gathering that information, we can empathize with them and begin to think about living in their world and seeing the community through their eyes. That's what reframing the who really involves. If we think about the next stage, which is reframing the why, this is where we know the who and we start to tackle what I refer to as a two-sided why. So what's in it for the members? That's where we start. And then moving from what's in it for the members to what are the business benefits or the organization or the institutional benefits that can be achieved through this relationship. And again, some of the activities that are involved in reframing the why is by understanding that continuum of member needs and understanding the business benefits of those. Let's just assume that you have, you know, if you will, five different groups of archetypes of members. Some want a very sort of transformational kind of exchange. Some really want maybe a tactical exchange. And there's nothing wrong with either of those. It just helps you understand that on the opposite side of that value exchange from a tactical versus a transformational perspective, what business benefits can be realized, all of which are equally important. So once we have all of that, I think we're in a much better place to begin to articulate a community vision that really resonates with not only the members, but the institution, the business, the organization. We're able to craft a more meaningful purpose. And then the value proposition we see is really one that promises something we can truly deliver because we know, in fact, what the needs are of the community members. And more importantly, as you get to this stage, you begin to think about how do you tell that story through your brand? And that's really important because the brand, in fact, is really critical to the personality of the message. So making sure that that is all aligned becomes equally important as you get to this stage. And you bring it to life. And so many ways of bringing it to life involved creating the vision board or telling a vision story. And the kind of the power of doing that is that when you go to share this, to test it, feedback, people can actually envision what that experience feels like as they sit kind of in this new reality. Using that feedback as you engage with some of the targeted community members, you can refine, if you will, your messaging, or you can refine what makes sense for the business along with the brand. And kind of the final stage of reframing is the what. And, you know, I'd like to just throw out there that sometimes, as I mentioned, we kind of start with the what. And so in many cases, when we're down the line or in the future, and we have to make important decisions because either affordability comes into play or capabilities are scarce, we don't have a really, you know, sound database, if you will, to be able to make these decisions about what. And sometimes that makes us feel, you know, uninformed about what's gonna change the community, how is it gonna be impacted. So starting with the who, moving to the why gives us even stronger decisioning power, and then we move into what. And as we do in any relationship, we want to co-create the what with some targeted members who play a role in kind of this co-creation process, as well as business leaders. And we invite these individuals to bring forward their ideas about not only what they need, but how can they see these needs being fulfilled? What kind of experiences, what do those experiences look like through them? And through this very collaborative approach, come to sort through a bunch of different ideas. And then we can start to converge, if you will, on what in fact can we offer as an experience? And what in fact is feasible and viable for our business to be able to deliver over time. With that, we have such insight then to begin to develop our future roadmap of how we design and build each of these offerings, starting from the desired experience we would like to create and moving back, versus starting from the offering and asking ourselves about what kind of experience do we want around. It's really the best way in this case to start with an experience first and then take it from there. And then that gives you the opportunity to test and iterate as you release these smaller pieces, if you will, of your overall end-to-end offering. And then there, it's really about choreographing or staging, if you will, the end-to-end member experience with, you know, thinking about their journey as they join, think about their journey as they continue to engage and participate in different offerings, and think about how they may in fact leave and maybe rejoin at a time where they have that opportunity. So this is all about how you bring the who, the why, and the what together in a reframed perspective. And I honestly believe, although obviously I'm probably a little bit biased, that this human-centered approach is really, really important when you're trying to engage and really grow, if you will, your community even more so. I know that was really high level. It was intended to be. But really what I hope that you've been able to take away from this is how a human-centered approach might involve a different sequence. It might involve you asking different questions or seeing through somebody else's eyes, and that it's piqued your interest enough to maybe think about it as you either are creating your community or evolving it. I want to just let you know, I really only touched on some of the human design or human-centered design concepts, and there's a whole lot more that you can explore on that. But again, you know, human-centered design is really rooted in those actual needs of the people, as I mentioned, and they're developing solutions to problems that involve the human all along the way. So as you can see, in understanding the who we engaged targeted members, and understanding the why we engaged both targeted members and representatives from the organization, the institution, and the business, so we can get to that two-sided why. And then we engage them in the what. When you engage people that are actually going to be part of your community and what you're going to deliver, they almost solve the problem, if you will, for you. They come up with the most creative ideas in which they can actually have a role in, and that's how you get true engagement. So final question might be, so how do you have proof that this approach actually works or is even better? All I really would tell you is that organizations such like Warby Parker and Fab and Airbnb and Pinterest, they're all design driven. They've actually proven that being human-centered or taking a human-centered design approach as they think about their consumers or their customers or even their employees is really what drives overall growth for them. So thanks for listening. It's just kind of interesting because I can't see your faces and all. I hope this was informative for you, and I look forward to your questions.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for that. I found that fascinating. And yeah, you can't see their faces, but hopefully soon you will be able to meet a few of them at the speaker's table. I really enjoyed the themes that you brought to life there. The start with why and understand the why, obviously, you know, made probably most famous by that TED talk by Simon Sinek and the golden circle, really getting to the crux of you know, the meaning. And we've actually been going through this process with Illuminati as well. I think the championing of the human versus the organization is something which is constantly, I think, a necessary tension that needs to be resolved. Obviously, both of them matter, but I think perhaps we forget the human sometimes in the conversations. And then I actually had a question for you, if I might jump to the queue, as it were, which is about those deeper conversations that you have with the members. And I find often that people are swaying towards, you know, the survey. You know, let's just ask everyone and get them to fill in the long form. And that way we'll have a nice little big sample size and we can be confident about what people want. But that actually misses out those deeper conversations where actually you're really having a conversation as opposed to getting people to do a multiple choice question. How do you think it's best to convince and convey the value of actually, I mean, not necessarily ditching the survey, but actually spending some time, even if it's only a sample size of 10 or 20 people, that those are actually really worthwhile data points to inform the strategy?
Yeah, I think what I see in my work is, you know, the quantitative side of this is important at times, but I think the qualitative is equally as important because you can't read emotion, so to speak, in a survey. You can't read the body language, if you will, in a survey. And when you engage people in a conversation, they actually don't feel like you're just trying to get data after them. They really think, oh, okay, this is actually you want to hear my point of view. Not just via survey, you've actually taken the time to sit with me, to listen to me. And I know sit with me is not acceptable these days because we're living in this crazy virtual world. But the point is that when I can connect with you eye to eye and get close to you, if you will, and sit with you in your emotion, so to speak, I can actually see things that you can't show me in a survey. And so those human aspects of our personality, when we have a thought, emotion is the physiology response to us. So we get to see both of that when we do these qualitative kind of dirt conversations. And I think for me, that's the joy of it. And it starts to actually open up some of the ideation. Like you can start to understand somebody a little bit more and say, so how would you actually think that would work? How would that work? Whereas in a survey, you know, you're always pressed time, people are getting frustrated with the number of questions you're going to ask them, and then you having to interpret something that you can't actually see the other side of. So hopefully that brings that to life, Daniel, and the benefits of doing that approach.
Yeah, I think actually saying a survey is not a conversation, and it's a very different thing than a conversation, as it goes both ways.
Nicely and succinctly said. Thank you very much.
I think also it's also a lot more rapid because a survey takes planning. You've got to get it out. You've got to let people respond. And actually the conversations you can have, you can pick up the phone and speak to members, you know, every day. And in fact, you can have it as a habit that you know, two or three calls a week. And that lets you come into the last point, which is iteration, which is, you know, you launch and you're just starting. You've got to listen, you know, ask, listen, have these conversations and then iterate and improve. So, but there's a couple more questions that come through. I think my team actually got a couple for you as well. which is how do you find a balance when community members want different things? So you're talking to all these people and actually maybe they're actually contradicting. Someone says, I really like this page, and someone says, I really hate it. Like, what do you do?
Well, the beauty of it is the balance, frankly. I think what you have to do is, like, if you're thinking about tactical things, maybe like a page, I think you have to think about options. So if somebody wants a page some way, there's got to be some optional settings of which how they can have the page that way. So it's really about that user experience where it actually is attending to more than one need by letting user choose the way that they want to see it in many ways. If it's more about maybe, I think, physical, if you will, offering, so to speak, again, you, as a community leader, you know, you have to be able to talk to a bunch of people to see the thematical things they're looking for and to be able to produce those over time. So as I mentioned in my presentation, the one size fits all doesn't really work. And I know that's how we used to try to solve things because we were really focused on efficiency and optimization. But I think our world is really about if that's the way it works, it's going to be commoditized quite often. Mm-hmm. And so we need to think about the specialness of that. So it's always going to be that balance. But I think a lot of it is how do you provide the user with the options built into choosing what they want to see or want to interact with or not interact with or see kind of things. So that's how I would respond to that.
So it basically boils down to understanding your users and that they're humans and they have very, very tasty preferences and trying to meet those preferences through.
And yeah, and what they like one day might not like tomorrow, and what they need today, they may not need tomorrow. So we are complex human beings, and therefore our solutions these days need to be taking that into consideration, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. One coming from Elizabeth from Cambridge University. Do you ever find that what members think they like or want and how they behave doesn't play out in the data, and how do you resolve that?
So answer yes. That's the whole lovely human complexity thing. I generally think it's really about sometimes we read it literally, and I think it's about sitting with it and putting ourselves in their shoes where we begin to understand beyond that what the data is telling, what is the intuition now telling us? So we don't start with intuition. We read data, we sit with it, we empathize with the individual. Then it's intuition that we allow them to use from that basis. So, you know, and by the way, the great idea here is that you iterate. So you might actually release something that doesn't actually hit as well as you thought it's going to be. And then you take, you work on it and refine it further and get that feedback. So that's how I like to balance it. I don't think you're ever, it's never about perfect because that's never going to happen. No one's, not 100% of the people are 100% of everything we do, right? And so I think a little bit is trying to find that balance, but getting evidence, if you will, that shows you whether there's really a disconnect or is it an intuitive disconnect.
It reminds me a bit of science, where the observations and the data, when they don't match, that's actually the most fascinating part of science. And actually trying to work out, like, if everyone's saying that they want X, Y, Z, but no one's actually using X, Y, Z, there's something really interesting going on there.
We're really good as humans to say that we want something and in the moment to actually choose something else. So the other way to deal with that is to get as close as you can to understanding what they want and how they want it. And then watch what they do when they actually engage. And then from there, use that site to refine what it is next that you can make even better for your community. So observing it.
Yeah, and then have the conversation saying, oh, I noticed that you said you'd like this, but when we offered it, you didn't. So is there a reason for why you didn't take it on this occasion?
Yeah, was it presented properly? Did it not have something you were looking for? Or did you really just tell us you thought that you wanted it, but in fact, in reality, it wasn't what you needed. So,
they didn't see it because you're talking to them on the wrong channel, and actually they missed out and they regret that. So,
absolutely. So many possibilities. Yeah. So many possibilities.
Okay, I think time for one last question, which is actually from another one of our consultants. It's from Johanna, who is asking, what are some ways that organizations and institutions could have a more human-centric approach? Are there any quick wins? Are there any examples that you could share of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the quickest win is to always ask why and by who and for what. I mean, sometimes I think we kind of get into autopilot. We just go do. And sometimes we're in the doing process. We're like, wait a second. What do I use now to validate whether what I'm doing is right? So I think some of the quick wins is really to step back and to be grounded, if you will, in again, the who, the why, and the what all the way through. For example, I have worked with some big organizations, and I'm not speaking of Coca-Cola, so I just want to be clear because I know that Becky brought that up. But in some of my interactions with other people, you know, they say we've got a community and we're trying to expand it. And I say, well, what's driving some of that? And they're like, well, you know, we're just kind of looking for, you know, the ability to have more talent, you know, boomerang and that kind of thing. And I said, okay, that's interesting. So why would I want, why if I think of it as a community, why want to be a boomerang into your organization? And they say, well, what do you mean? I'm like, it's our organization. It's great. And I'm kind of like, sorry, nope. I got five other organizations competing for my attention right now because I've been through five organizations now. So a little bit is just, again, asking those questions to yourself and staying grounded those. And when people approach you, and they'll get used to this, when you start asking them the same questions, I think it's that kind of like, it's kind of the network where you ask it and then they start asking it and then somebody else starts asking it. And then you become a little bit more informed about why you're doing what you're doing and for who you're doing it for. And I think it's that kind of, I say, thinking process, if you will, that I think really starts the innovation and the human-centeredness, if you will, of an organization. So that's what I'll leave you with. Maybe it wasn't as tactical as an example, but I think it's a technique you can use, I think, to bring that forward.
Yeah, the question I've often heard in previous conversations is just asking it, what's in it for me? Put yourself in their shoes and say, what's in it for me? And I think the mind shift, that particularly for those of the audience who are coming from enterprise, is that when you're a big organization and you're working with, say, staff communities, you can do a lot of stuff based on effectively the compulsion that it's your job, you've got to do it. But once they leave, or you're dealing with the wider communities, even in universities, I guess, have a certain sense of like, well, I'm beholden to this institution to get my degree, therefore I should probably comply with the things they want me to do. Once they've gone off into the wild and you're dealing with these bigger communities, they are, as you said, their attention is being competed for with, you know, 1,000 other companies looking for, and they are completely in control of what they do and don't do. And that shift might be necessary.
Yeah. And as an alum, which is what we're kind of really focused on here, they don't owe you anything anymore. Like, they're not captive to your policies and your processes and their paycheck or anything like that. So now they're free. They're like they're somebody you really have to compete with. And I think getting that insight from them as to why they'd want to, in fact, engage after they left is really what holds that relationship together further.
Just want to say, Lisa, thank you once again for joining us and being our spotlight speaker at this webinar. It's been really fascinating.
This webinar podcast was brought to you by Illuminati.